to do the pool with a fountain, because the Andersons wanted a fountain. They did not want a statue. They wanted a fountain because they said, you know, that's really what the, where the beauty lies. It's in the sound of water. And Carlton Winslow wrote and he said, yeah, fountains are different than anything else. They're intimate. People play in them. People experience them. They immerse you, much like architecture does. You are immersed in the atmosphere. And so as they went through these multiple, oh, you please progress that, Mary, if you don't mind. These are the people that did it. That's Ivan Mastrovich on the left. He was, I will get to him in a little bit, but he was a world-renowned sculptor. His work has appeared. He was part of the Vienna Secessionist movement. By the way, Bruce said you're all experts, so don't even bother going and begging about. But he was part of the Secessionist movement and showed with Rodin and Klimt. And he really made a name for himself in Europe. He was one of the first, he showed at Victoria and Albert. And he, you know, really took Europe by storm. But then he was, he's from Croatia originally. He's a small, tiny little village. And he was just this little kid that they saw some promise in. So they sent him to Vienna, which is where he met the others. As recently as 2012, they had a big show of his work at the Musée Rodin in Paris. He's a very well-known and very respected artist in his field. Robert Lorenz is equally important. And that's important because nobody knows who did the fish. They know who did the St. Andrew Symposium, but they don't know who did the fish or why. And in all these letters, you can read that. The fish were an integral part of this complete complex because they provided the sound, they provided the water. Carlton Winslow is on the right. And he's pretty well known for his post-World War II architecture. Andersons are on the bottom. They actually, the third picture from in, you'll pardon my personal thing here, that's my dad. And that's his sister. And I said, boy, you were really good to your sister to let them take that picture. And he said, yeah, they paid me to let me take that picture. So his parents had to bribe him to doing that. But that's his acquired boy, St. Andrew, my parents getting married. You know, it's a lot of personal ties, but they aren't alone in these personal ties. Everybody who walks by that fountain on their way to work, to the historical buildings, you know, to your offices, you see it. Yesterday when I was there, people were eating lunch beside it. It's important. But what I'm going to speak to today is the artistic merit of it. It not only reflects this interconnectedness of Hawaii post-World War II, which was huge, that changed in time period. It became a very important point in the Pacific and continued to do so. But it also reflects, next slide, please, Mary, thanks. It also reflects a lifetime of Mastrovich. At this point, he was at the end of his life. In fact, he died about 3 or 4 years later. This was one of his last major commissions. He was, again, he showed many places. He was the first artist to have a solo show, living artist, to have a solo show at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Both Mastrovich and Rant, who did the fish, are owned in museums in they're at the Whitney, they're at the Smithsonian, they're at the Met, they're in you know, British Museum, they're everywhere, these statues and their works. I actually called Christie's and said, what value would you put on this? And they said, we can't. We never get big statues like this. You know, his Mastrovich is at Grant Park, the big Bowman and Spearman that are there. And there was some movement to have those removed, you know, because Native Americans were, they thought they would offend them, but actually the Native Americans liked it and said, no, he understands the spirit of a Native people. He understands the spirit that is universal to everybody. And they found them powerful. And so they remain there to this day. And they're colossal. It's kind of fun to watch the horse carriages. But this is some example of some of Mestrovich's work. His Pietà, he did the, sorry, Mary, would you dance? He did the Pietà here, the bust of Tesla, which is in the Tesla, was commissioned by Tesla and in the Tesla headquarters or whatever. Milrae the St. Jerome, the priest. He went through various stages in his life. The main picture on the bottom is actually the Mestrovich Museum in Croatia. It's a huge complex. He just not only did the sculpture within it, but he also designed, he was the architect designing this. He was known as a statesman. He stood against the regime at the time. He was Slavic, but it was Yugoslavia at the time, and he wanted Slavic rights. And he He was imprisoned because he stood against their anti-Semitic policies. So he's actually, because he was such an important figure, he was exiled rather than executed after spending months and months in prison, almost over, 6 months in prison. They exiled him to the US and Roosevelt gave him his passport at the White House. He was that well known. And, time changes, things pass, we get consumed by other more pressing immediate needs. But he's worth remembering. This is his monument to the unknown hero. Below is, I'm sorry, below is the monument to the unknown hero. Above is the commission he was given to do a gratitude, a statue of gratitude to France for their help in the Balkans, in the countries during the war. This pietà that he did is at Notre Dame University in their chapel. He did, next, please, yeah. They went through many iterations, and there were some pretty funny moments along the time because Meshkovich and Winslow worked side by side to create the proportions, everything about it. So there were some funny moments. He would write these. They did these drawings. I call that the wedding cake one on the upper left. But he's holding this really limp fish. And my grandmother says, she says, in America, excuse me, in Hawaii, where the Hawaiians are great fishermen, they might think you have done pretty badly with this one fish. She said, can't we have some better fish? So he comes and gets more multiple fish on the bottom. Still, he goes, no, this guy's really rustic. Andrew was, Andrew traveled the world preaching, but he, the gospel of Christ. And I know that the religious doesn't come into this because this is historic on other grounds, rightly so, so that we don't have one faith over another. But she says, let's make him something that's a little bit more simplified. And thank goodness, can you get the next one? Like my brother said, he goes, thank goodness we got to that one. because this design is so beautiful. It is the Andersons love Hawaii enough to understand local sandstone. The church is built of English and Hawaiian sandstone. Kind of ran out of the one and they wanted to keep building. So is the pond, so is the pool. They used very classical Gothic proportions. Absolutely put it central to the access very intentionally, and all those documents are in here, so that it would accentuate and bring people in and reflect the height of the cathedral as it goes upward. To me, I could see him standing out there at Kaena Point, just welcoming people. The other interesting thing that they chose was Carlton Winslow, the architect, wanted him to face the altar. And the Andersons and said, no, we think he'd be much less concerned with the altar than he would be with the people of Honolulu. And so the Andersons really gave this as a gift to the church for the people of Honolulu. And so that's why he faces the way he does outward. And I love it. It's simple, it's welcoming. It gives that feeling of welcome, of aloha, of ohana to all. And it is universal in its access. Anybody in Honolulu can access this. It is, it's a treasure. Let me talk to you about Robert Laurent just briefly. Next one, please. Mary? Yeah, Robert Laurent and the fish. So they send the plaster cast to Rome. It's going to be cast in Rome, and the Andersons go to Rome to oversee this. They're quite elderly by this time, and they were retired. And my grandmother spoke fluent Italian. And so they go, and they're doing this. And they run into Robert Laurent, who is at that time head of the American Academy at Rome. His work is also in the Met. In fact, you can watch a video about him on the Met YouTubes. He was very influential in the latter half of sculpture in the 20th century. His work is, he was working at this time when they met him on the Showalter fountain in Indiana for the University of Indiana. And they saw his fish and they said, that's our answer. That's our answer to the splashing water that we always wanted. Because what's a fountain without splashing water? So they said, will you do it? And he jumped at it because Meshkovich was so well known. He goes, yeah, I'd love to do that. So they did. And next slide, please, Mary. This is his Showalter fountain in the University of Indiana. And I'd just like to show you one thing here. These are beautiful fish. They're just like ours. These went on to influence Bishop Cranbrook, which is a National Historic Site in Michigan. They're incredibly good examples of that period of architecture. We took organic shapes and a lot of Syrian influence, actually. They took these organic shapes and made them very stylized. But here's before and after. I think it's a different part of the facade. They may have changed that facade from memory. They don't match. But this is what was on the website before and after. And what a difference a fountain makes. So when we ask to nominate this, we're not asking to nominate Mr. or Mrs. Sculpture. With sculptor, it is sculpture. Thank you. We're not asking to nominate his fish. We are asking to nominate this fountain as a whole, because it was conceived as an integral part, an inseparable part of the cathedral. And that is one of the criteria. Next, please. So it was met with great, everything got shipped back. It was met with great fanfare. And Dean Cox at the time said it would be certainly one of the great monuments of the Pacific. Mm-hmm. And they loved it. Next picture, please. And then the fountain, the lighting, and all the trees were given by other people. But together, they created this amazing sanctuary. Next, please. And this was the dedication of it. And one of the most amazing things is that this fountain has its integrity completely intact. It was dedicated in 58. But as I said, the feeling that comes behind this fountain comes from 80 years of Mr. Fish's life, 80 years of the donors. They were older. They had a history here. They had a feeling here, and feeling for people. And the second one is in 1978, completely the same. This one, just a couple years ago, this one speaks to water too. No garden or cement's going to make that. But this is what happened a month ago. And it broke our hearts. And a fountain isn't a fountain without the water. We have the technology, we have the means of doing it. My sister's been in contact with the State Energy Board. They have wonderful ideas. We know it's private property, but it's also a great treasure to the islands. And so when you take away that historical integrity, which is pristine now, it will lose something. It will lose the soul of its historical integrity. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much the case. If you have any questions about any of these things, right now those fish are being stored in, they have been removed, and according to the fish are permanently removed. But they are stored in like an annex building somewhere. And it's a treasure we don't want to lose. Especially since it can be such a focal point. Any questions, or do you want the other testimonies too, or do you want to ask questions and then have the other testimonies? I don't know how this works. I haven't done this before.
I guess we could complete the testimony and then ask questions.
Perfect.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to stick?
Sure.
And then following her, my. Louise, are you counting on anything?
Yeah.
Could you, Corinne speak, and then Elise, and there's a 3-minute time limit on it. Corinne and Elise, and then Bruce. And he's on Zoom, if you don't mind bringing him in. And my sister has submitted written testimony.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. It was very interesting.
Oh, nice. Thank you so much.
Hi, Corinne.
Hi,
nice to
you.
See you.
Thank you for your service. It sounds like.
No, it doesn't actually broadcast.
Need to record.
It's just for the tape. So you can leave it there or either way, it picks you up.
Mary's done such a great job of covering the history of the artwork and how it contributes to the overall art of vitality. So I will just add a few thoughts of my own, if you don't mind. So to the members of the historic review board. My name is Corinne Ching. I am a former state representative and the founder of the Hawaii State Legislature's Heritage Caucus, as well as its Historic Preservation Awareness Day. As a former teacher of Ma'ima'i Elementary School, the Daughters of Hawaii, and a community advocate, I testify in strong support of the inclusion of the fountain in the registry. The fountain is a symbol of healing of the soul. And is much needed at this time in the Civic Center, in our state, in our world.
I need not elaborate too many minutes on the importance and the history of civic fountains to this esteemed and well-educated board. As you understand deeply and well enough, the connection of authentic beauty and urban design to the well-being of the health of the people. I would also like to add the connection it has to the well-being of our economy, which still relies in its majority to the visitors who contribute to our museums, such as the one next door and across the street from the cathedral, as well as the Mission Houses Museum, and the small businesses in the outlying area that sustain our citizens and their income across the state. I will only reiterate the concepts of civic vitality, age-old and proven concepts of good design, and inspiration, the uplifting benefits of beauty. Hawaiians define prosperity as bai bai, and that literally translates to water, water. The Chinese mandate and always include a water feature in their gardens, as feng shui experts determine that water is the symbol of the flow of wisdom and knowledge. It represents the flow and energy of life. We are baptized in water as we cleanse our souls. And all of this, I'm sure, the founders and donors knew, and thus with great thought, donated this esteemed fountain. All great cities have had the challenges of vagrants, disrespectful individuals, lack of civic spirit, and downright ugly, vulgar vandalism. I have seen this in my district before, with the Kunawai Springs Pond, a sacred healing site of the Hawaiians. But it still stands because to end water is to end this message of life and to send instead a message yielding to disrespectful behavior. What message would we be sending if we gave in to these vagrants? Yes, all great cities have challenges like this. So we must do what all great cities do. We endure. We stand strong. Be a symbol of strength. Not give in to the destructive forces by sacrificing values of beauty instead for ugliness. And thereby, by standing for beauty, we keep the values and the vision alive of those kind, charitable individuals who cared enough for the congregation and outlying residents to donate this fountain as a symbol of wisdom. So what do we do when those around us misbehave? Do we close libraries because someone defaced a book, stole a book? Do we fill in the alawai with concrete because someone fell into it? No, we endure, we survive, and we preserve beauty so those on the precipice of anguish, despondency, or sorrow might be inspired by this vision of ancestors. We stay the course and we uplift beauty. So, in strong support, because the world needs these symbols of civilization now more than ever, I thank you for your time. I thank you for your service in allowing me to share my views.
Thank you.
Mahalo.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
My name's Elise Anderson. I'm a Honolulu attorney and also the great granddaughter of Robbins Patel Anderson and Mary Morris Anderson. Forgive me, I'm a little upset about this, so I'm going to read off my paper. As well as someone who was born and raised in Honolulu and who has frequently stopped to enjoy the fountain and the courtyard at my great-grandparents' legacy all my life, I believe that I have a unique perspective into the significance of this fountain based on the time I spent in Croatia as well while living and working there for a summer a few years ago. Also, by the way, my other ancestors gave the doors of the St. Andrew's Cathedral, and so I've always kind of considered throughout my life that this courtyard is a special kind of home, and the idea of draining it and turning it into something that's not a fountain is very upsetting as both someone who has a personal bond to the place and also just a resident of Honolulu. And I know that speaking with my friends who you know the fountain as a fountain, feel similarly. Anyway, I was especially struck by the cathedral's testimony that the olive trees are somehow less worthy of historic designation because they are not indigenous. I think this statement misunderstands that it's because of the international connection that this fountain and its courtyard is significant to Hawaii and to, as a historic object. When you tour Split, Hvar, or Zagreb, Croatia, the tour guides all spend a good chunk of their tours talking about Ivan Meštrović. He was, as my aunt mentioned, and as you learn immediately in Croatia, probably the most celebrated of any artist of Croatia of any kind in any medium in the modern era. The fact that Hawaii in the 1950s and 60s entered into an artistic collaboration with such an iconic artist from the other side of the world speaks to our uniquely cosmopolitan stature in the mid-20th century. As I think my aunt mentioned, Robert Laurent was born in France, and Carlton Winslow was very renowned amongst the West Coast doing Spanish colonial work. Also, specifically as to the olive trees are very significant to the Mediterranean region where much of the inspiration for the fountain was from. The cathedral's testimony indicates a concern with the longevity of the olive trees in the Hawaii climate. I think that's especially ludicrous because if you go to Greece, you'll find that Crete olive trees are about 3,000 years old. I personally visited an olive tree in Castella, Croatia that was 1,500 years old. And maybe they won't survive to 3,000 in the Hawaii climate, or I mean, that olive tree's not dead yet. It could last till 5,000 years. But given, even if it were to survive a fraction of that time, I think it's worth preserving. And the olive trees, the fountain, the fish, it's a totality of atmosphere that really, really exemplifies the bond between Hawaii and the rest of the world in this pivotal era. And I don't think there's anything else in the Honolulu region that does quite that. Kamehameha united the islands 213 years ago. If these olive trees live to be even a small fraction of, you know, what they have lived to be in their climates, which are not entirely different from ours, actually, I think it's worth preserving. So, yeah, I just wanted to get my word in there because I feel strongly about this core principle.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Bruce from online. So if you'd like to unmute, you may.
Oh, and my sister Kathy is on the right. She did a lot of the research. In fact, I could give you something. I don't know how much she'll speak, but this is a letter that she got from the board of different options that are available to, from the Maria Tome. Different options that may be available for treating some of the issues that we do right face in trying to preserve this sound.
Just want to go first?
Starting the conversation.
Let me say a few words, Kathy, if I could.
Sure. Okay.
Hello, members. I wonder if the video is and the voice is working. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. Hello from Virginia. My wife and I, my Debbie and I, had the privilege of living in a historic home on Oahu Avenue for decades, and I appreciated hearing about all the other homes that were being nominated, and I'm very pleased that they were selected. Mary has described at length the history of the fountain, and of course the those involved in creating the fountain. And my written testimony, you may or may not have, focused more on the ambiance created by the fountain, the sound of the water, and how I enjoyed that as I was walking from Punchbowl down to my office. I must have stopped by the fountain almost every day for decades, actually, when I worked in Hawaii. But I wanted to say a few things in addition to what they said. No one has actually spoken directly to what the purpose of our putting together an application to list the fountain on the list of historic places. The cathedral has been listed for a long time. In fact, at the time the cathedral was listed as a historic place, the fountain was less than 50 years old. And I think that's the only reason why it was not included in the registration of as a historic place. It had not been around that long. It has now, of course, and I think it's important that it be considered as the cathedral was, as a very significant site. We had, that is my, I was told, and my sisters subsequently were told about the church's intention to drain the pond and refill the pond with rock or marble or something inert. And we were shocked to hear that. I was quite dismayed, and it was only then that we thought, well, maybe we should check to see if it's on the list of historic places. I certainly can't see anyone destroying the fountain as it is. And then it occurred to me that, you know, when I the fountain was conceived, I wasn't even born. And in fact, I was 5 or 6 years old when the fountain was dedicated. You saw some of the photos that Mary showed you. I grew up in Hawaii, and I must have been to the church 100 times. I was married there. I was baptized there. So were my kids. So I knew the fountain as probably as the church as well as anyone, but I had no understanding of the history of the fountain and the significance of the fountain until we started looking into the history of it and got some details. And I'm willing to bet that the current leadership also has had very little understanding of the fountain and significance when they made the decision, or at least started this process of filling in the fountain and essentially destroying it as a water feature. Its significance has been spoken to, and I won't belabor that. It's a wonderful refuge for all of us. I stopped there. I'm walking from the punch bowl to go to my office because it was such a nice, peaceful place to be. And in our concrete jungle there in Honolulu, it's I think one of the few places that remains is a place where you can get away from things and just enjoy the quiet and the sound of the water and so forth. But I did want to just reinforce one point, and that is that the our grandparents wanted the fountain to serve as a sanctuary for everyone, both rich and poor. I think the church has done a good job in dealing with the homeless, frankly. I walked by that fountain for decades, and I never saw any sign of vandalism or damage. Likewise, I think they've done a good job recently, at least in the last few years, of trying to control manage at least the homeless population. And there are always issues, the maintenance issues everyone has. Things get older, it costs more to fix them and to maintain them. So there are a million reasons why they probably could find to do something draconian, such as to drain the fountain. But I think it's incumbent on all of us to try to find ways to preserve it as it is. You can recycle the water. The water actually isn't being recycled now. You can put in solar pumps. You can reduce the cost considerably with very modest expenditures. Obviously, it's hard dealing with the homeless issues. Those are tough. But I do think the fountain is worth preserving and protecting as a historic feature. The life-giving water in the fountain is essential. And I hope you'll agree. Anyway, thank you for the chance to testify, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
May I come back up for a second? Thank you. One of the things Bruce wrote in his testimony was that, Bruce, you spoke, come back. Go away. Bruce, you spoke of the fountain as almost as if it were a fish pond. What were you thinking there? Did you hear me?
Well, it's you know, I actually, in my testimony, as you may read, I was trying to figure out, thinking, what do we value in Hawaii? And I happen to spend a lot of time with that Kulo Ranch at Mali'i Fish Pond, and how wonderful it was to have water and be on the water and all of what fish ponds produce. Now, with the of course with the bronze fish and the statue, you can't eat the fish. But I made the same analogy that the water is almost in Honolulu, it's about as close to a fish pond as you can get, and they you can't eat the fish, but they do nourish the soul. And I think from that standpoint, it sort of has the same ambiance, if you will. It's different, but it has many of the same messages and feelings to it that I think we get with Hawaiian fish ponds and a lot of other things that we've come to treasure here in Hawaii. So that was my point.
Thank you. And Kathy, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, thanks. I did want to just add quickly, thank you, Bruce, for all of that and everybody who's spoken so far and the board for hearing it. I did submit a written testimony, but as I know time is short, but I mainly wanted to also feature Carlton Winslow when he was writing to my grandfather, Robin Sanderson, in 1955. He wrote, fountains, I'm quoting him now, fountains differ from other monuments in that they make an appeal not only to the sense of vision, but to the sense of hearing. Essentially, fountains are an intimate thing. Part of the charm of fountains of Rome are the black-haired children climbing on them. Therefore, I think fountains should be placed where they can be enjoyed frequently by people passing close. I therefore suggest that your fountain be placed in the most important possible location on the site, on the centerline axis of the cathedral, about 70 feet in front of the main entrance. It will be noticed and heard by everyone who attends church. It will be far enough back from the busy street that its sound will be fully appreciated, because he wrote about the qualities of water or a fountain is not only visual, it's audible. And then I just wanted to do write to say one more quote that my grandmother, Mary Morris Anderson, wrote to the sculptor Ivan Mestrovich in 1956, where she quoted his words back to him. So I imagine you can assume this is what he was thinking. I'm quoting my grandmother writing Mestrovich. "I feel you are wise in that you want to make the fountain simple and dignified, where besides the statue of St. Andrew, only the element of water should be accentuated." And I have the quotes in my written testimony. And as Bruce mentioned, there's a future for the fountain. Maria Tomei with the Hawaii State Energy Office emailed me in April when I asked her about possibly recycling the water with solar energy. She was very excited about that idea and had a lot of ideas of how to make it happen. And I just wanted to put that in to show there is a future. You can keep the fountain as it is and still make it more economical, and still have it keep its integrity. As Mary showed, there are newspaper articles. When the fountain was unveiled in 1958, and some of the pictures of the fountain that is in the amendment is from this last May, when the fish was still there and the water was still there, just this last year. So it has been very well maintained, and the integrity of the fountain has been maintained as well. So hope that helps. Thank you.
We do have to thank the cathedral for the great care they have taken over 5 bishoprics. And it's just they've given the Hawaii such a gift, this cathedral has, in maintaining this fountain, and I'm very grateful for them for that. Bishoprics come and go, deans come and go, we will come and go. But I think that fountain is a gift for Hawaii forever. Any questions?
So one quick check. Is the cathedral separately listed on the register already?
Yes, the cathedral is already a part of the registry, national and state. It's also, I guess, part of the, Mary, you can speak to this better than I, but part of the Capital Historic District too, isn't it? And so we're asking it to be a contributing object because when it was, the cathedral is listed, the significant period of significance goes 19th century. That's what it says, which doesn't do any good. So the last really significant work that was done on the cathedral in terms of architecturally is in 58. And that's when this was located.
Right.
And though I think the facade was finished in like 57 or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So now we're well into past that 50-year mark. But
so you're updating the nomination. It'd be a continuation sheet. Is that it?
Well, as a contributing object. So that uh-huh. it actually has, we believe it stands alone as an important feature on its own. And because it is a bit threatened, we thought, you know, it's good to, one, we just wanted the history here. We wanted the story there, because there's no place it was. So we wanted the story there. Well, you got kind of a long application there. And then we'd like it to be, we'd like them to have access to your resources, to your expertise. You know, a lot of these people don't know a thing about what they're doing. I wouldn't know what I was doing. So to have your expertise, availability of the community to come together on this. I just thought it was a win-win for all.
Right. I just asked any technicality on how.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, whether it's a continuation sheet for the, I know they're encouraging that more to add in things to a lot of old districts and a lot of old nominations don't come up to date.
Yes, the it states in the beginning of the nomination that none of the aspects of the cathedral are being addressed. They're all the same. It's just adding this as a contributing object to their standards.
To the cathedral.
To the cathedral district, yeah. So that's basically, and to change that that period of significance to incorporate all that.
So have they told you specifically why they drained the pool and took the fish out?
Yes, they have. And the bishop speaks to that. The bishop came in 2006, somewhere around there, just after the year 2000. He's from Indiana, Illinois, that area. That's where his adult training was until he came in the early 2000s. Canon Heather is, her training is in the East. She's also has done a lot with history, so she appreciates history. I kind of got a mixed message yesterday. We had a long talk and it was really fun because we never met each other personally. And she said, no, we don't plan to do anything that's not reversible. And then when I read for the first time the bishop's response, he said, we have permanently removed the fish. So they're on two different pages there. And to permanently remove those fish and put them in an annex is criminal. I'm sorry, it just is. And I know that they own it. I know that they, but we just hope the story is told and we hope that they have the resources and that they can come to appreciate the incredible work that Lawrence work is.
Mm-hmm.
And realize with our new technologies, there are not only technologies available, there are students at UH and there's students at Iolani School, which they're a part of, that would really be, this would be a great community project. So we're just, they're kind of just starting the conversation that we didn't want this to be adversarial at all. We just started this thinking, how can we help? And that's why Kathy came up with fundraising ideas and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, we're so grateful that you guys do the work you do. Because when I come back, I married a man, guy from the mainland. But when I come back to Hawaii, I go to the mausoleum or I go to the cemetery that we were just talking about. I used to pass it all the time on the way up to Lee's house, as a matter of fact, because I lived there and she lived up there. And, you know, these places are treasures, absolute treasures. And they give us that feeling that is Hawaii. And I love that.
Well, the Bishop of Edward starts out positively and then kind of degenerates.
It does go through it. You know, I do understand liability. In the best of all worlds, I'd like to see the city help them. It's incredibly expensive. They have China to deal with. They have all these expenses to deal with. And I think what's happened is the vision's got a little myopic because they have so many immediate needs right now. But I know there's concern about, you know, numerous things, security, liability, all those kinds of things, but they can be addressed, especially if we can get some community involvement. And that's why we're hoping with the designation of the historic registry, it you guys have a lot of...
Seems like a lot of it's a security, issue, the homelessness thing and all that.
Yeah. And
they ended up burying the one over there by on New Uwana Street because it was being used as a sort of outdoor facility by homeless people. So sad.
Well, if we can get to, you know, the problem is as Prince spoke to, so much is lost because a few times it gets abused. If we can maybe have more security, have more, you know, police come by or whatever, the cathedral bears a tremendous financial burden for this. And it would be wonderful if we could get a community together. And I think this historic designation is part of it. And for me, getting to the record, getting on the record, the story, because it is a great love story, actually. Those two were, my grandparents were amazing. And it's personal, but that's not the reason. I love Hawaii. I always have. It's my home, even though I live on the mainland, it's my home. And it's my heart. And I think so many of us feel the same way. This is our home.
So if the owner is opposed, what's the story?
The owner is not actually opposed. They've simply got some concerns that they've expressed. They've not expressed opposition.
That's what you told me yesterday.
No,
but that's what Ken and Heather told me yesterday.
Yeah, the bishop's letter does not oppose the nomination.
But just because we're getting running out of time, I better make a motion.
Go ahead.
So I move that we... What would you call it? Accept this addendum to the existing nomination of St. Andrew's Cathedral under criteria A and C.
I'll second.
For listing on the Hawaii Register of Historic Places.
Would you suggest
and recommend that this information be forwarded to the National Register for inclusion in the National Register? Mm-hmm. I don't think they require a vote on a. We don't require a continuation sheet, doesn't require
the state register, but not for the national. We can just make the update for the national.
Right. That's what I was trying to say in my less articulate way. Yeah.
For the state register.
It does require a vote.
Yeah.
And you're second?
Second.
Okay.
Anybody likes these chocolates, don't you know now? I'm just kidding.
Further discussion. Okay, take a vote.
Thank you for your good work.
Thank you for it, right?
Yes.
Thank you all for everything you've done to support you. Huge job. I got a sight of that today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You must wait till 2.
Yes. So we have another break until
1:55.
Get some water.
Yeah. Take my trash somewhere.
We just nominated something for in a condition that's not currently in.
For anybody new who just arrived, there's a sign-in sheet on the table. We also have a sign-up sheet if you'd like to give testimony. So if you could spend the next 15 minutes while we break between now and when the GM starts, signing in and then also signing up for testimony if you'd like to give testimony.
We voted to add it to St. Andrew's nomination, right? But
I just
you're right.
Like the fish aren't there anymore.
I know.
So. The water's not there, and I think I get what they're saying, but it needs to be interpreted that putting this stuff is not an act. You can't mandate them.
Yeah, and I think it hurt folks whether it really helps folks that will thank you, that will help encourage people to do so. You know, taking the water out of various water
fountains. I would have taken the coffee though, rather than the seized candy.
I just put that on the disclosure about.
No, that I'd go before the other school.
Thank you guys.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
Thank you
coming.
For your testimony.
Thank you. Thanks.
I'm so glad that they said the bishop was not opposed.
Yeah, that's helpful.
And if we have, like, if this gets full, then I'm gonna let we can put a screen outside. The microphone, you can hear, or are you going to sit if you want? The microphone, you can just leave it right by you. It doesn't record it here, but it's sort of online.
Sorry, I've been
asked.
This should be trimmed here. Yeah, I just placed that. That's
beautiful. Okay, yeah, that's just forward.
Got it. Okay.
I brought my with the cord, but I didn't bring the
bait.
Whatever you want to do.
Thank you for your support.
Yes.
You're doing great, sweetie.
No, it's easier. I just go like this.
Downstairs. I put in for the maximum of 2 hours. Can we just pay our difference when we go out? I didn't see any person down there.
No, you should go.
You have to.
Hours
every, you
go
have to go and put it in again.
Yeah.
Every 2 hours, you have to go.
Okay. Then I've missed a couple of hours. I think already. So
well, I mean, as
right
long
now.
As you go down and pay now, if you haven't gotten a ticket, you'll be fine. If you have gotten a ticket, you should get
it. I don't have a ticket. It's a lot.
I have no idea.
Oh,
I would have gotten tickets.
Oh, no.
Okay.
It's like parking Waikiki.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's what they charge now. Somewhere at Royal Hawaiian Mall, I think it's about
$30. And I see by like a 99-cent bottle of water.
Now, who else worked on this nomination? Is another.
Yeah.
Woman, I was one of my students once. So.
Okay.
I was going to try to see if I could look it up on the bottom, but. Rachel, I knew she was a field student. soon am I?
Kelly.
Kelly, yeah. All right.
Yeah, she's the executive director.
Is she?
Yeah.
She's not coming today?
No, she'll be tuning in on Zoom.
Oh, good. Well, Kelly was a student of mine.
She's
I'm
awesome.
Thinking 20 years ago.
Is one of them the handheld?
It's good?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's continue with our meeting. I'd like to remind anybody or tell people if they weren't here before that if you are online and you would like to provide testimony after the presentation is done, please indicate so in the chat that you would like to. And also we're going to limit the testimony to 3 minutes each just because we may have a lot and hopefully you can get say what you need to say in that time. Anything else?
I think that covers it.
Okay. Thank you guys for joining us and go ahead.
Is there a place that we should be directing our voice if we need to talk into this microphone?
We think if that's just sitting there, that's
sensitive enough to pick it up.
And actually, these pick you up too, I think. So.
Okay. Aloha, Chair Stevens, Vice Chair Chapman, members of the Lead Soul, CAB, and HEART. My name is Shelly Moneosa. I'm testifying on behalf of Kahea, the Hawaiian Environmental Alliance. We're one of the two entities putting forth the nomination of Mauna Kea as a TCP. We want to thank you for the time and space today to hear our proposal. And mahalo the many hea'i who have joined us here from afar on the Zoom. In many ways, the question before you is uncontroversial. No one denies the cultural significance of Mauna Kea. It's one of the few things that we all agree on. And there has been support for its recognition as a TCP from many diverse people and players for decades. Longtime advocates like members of the Mauna Kea Hui, of which we are a part, including Uncle Puching, Auntie Deb Ward, and Kealoha Kishora, have been advocating for this nomination for a quarter of a century now. Since at least 1999, the state has recognized the Mauna Kea Summit region as eligible for inclusion on the National Register of Historic Places. The historic district was initially proposed in the cultural impact assessment for the Mauna Kea Summit Reserve Master Plan. Shifty then designated the Mauna Kea Summit Region Historic District as a state historic site as part of its draft historic preservation plan for the Science Reserve. However, that plan was never finalized. Also in 1999, archaeologists conducted oral histories with Panaka Maoli Kupuna that supported the designation of Mauna Kea as a TCP. And then in 2000, Kipa Maoli identified TCPs within the historic district and recommended the entire Mauna as eligible. Even Tom King, who wrote the 1992 National Park Service's guidance on TCPs, testified in a 2003 contested case hearing in support of Mauna Kea being designated as a TCP. Between 2005 and 2010, McCoy, Nees, and Collins, amongst other archaeologists, conducted surveys that concluded that Mauna Kea Historic District is eligible for listing in the National Register under all five criteria, which we'll hear a little bit more about today. After the Mauna Kea Hui won one of their lawsuits, the Third Circuit Court required UH to create what would eventually become the 2009 Comprehensive Management Plan. And in it is language to support an application for designation of the summit region of Mauna Kea as a TCP. And every year, UH would come back before the land board and they would say, if a nomination is submitted, UH will support it. However, no one has ever submitted a nomination until now. So preparing this nomination has taken significant time and resources to prepare, and it's something proactive we wanted to do to build on the consensus that Mauna Kea is a culturally significant place. But it's not enough for us to just say as much conversationally, or to put in beautiful language on a website, or in the forewords of management documents and reports. This designation pays respect to Kanaka worldviews and honors the deep relationships we have with this mountain by putting into official record the elevated role of Mauna Kea and the specific practices that take place there. We called on the research and process expertise of Kuleohaʻa to draft this nomination through the synthesis of the brilliance of the Arlahui, captured in the public record of countless hearings, court cases, written comments, plans, and reports. They pulled from oral traditions, vessels of Ike Kupuna through centuries and generations, gathered from historical records, the works of 19th century Hawaiian scholars, and countless other sources that all describe across time and from many perspectives the uniqueness of Mauna Kea. For decades, we've heard an expressed desire to close the gap between the different sides of this issue, and this designation is something that everyone can get behind, and is in fact something that everyone has already been supporting. In fact, in the March meeting of this very body, Vice Chair Chapman described this nomination as textbook, and further stated, if you look at Tom King's stuff early on, this is exactly what he was talking about. And SHPD administrator Dr. Downer said he certainly agreed and stated that in his personal professional opinion, there is no straight-faced argument that this isn't a TCP. So if you believe, as we do, that Mauna Kea is a sacred place, an ancestor, a place that people and practices rely on and have relied on for generations, you should support this nomination. As Julio Paul will speak to, this designation alone doesn't give any enhanced protection. What it gives is an enhanced recognition of the cultural significance of this place. And it's a proactive measure that we can take to move forward together in a more grounded relationship with each other and with one another. Well, I'm going to turn it over to Fuqua to share about the ins and outs of our nomination. Yeah.
Awesome. Mahalo, Shelley. And mahalo, you folks, for having us here today. Again, my name is Ku'upua Kiuna, and I'm the legal specialist for Huli Alpa'a. I'm also joined today by Huli Alpa'a's historic preservation specialist, Rachel Herman, and our president, Kekua Makiki Loi, will be joining us shortly. Before we begin, I also want to acknowledge that on our Zoom is our executive director, Kelly Uyoka, and our deputy executive director, Dominique Porty. So our organization's reach is pai aina wide, and we really mahalo the fact that you guys allowed us to have this meeting hybrid style so that they could join us from their respective islands. And I guess onto the show. So today I'll be presenting on Mauna Kea and its nomination to the Hawaii Register and the National Register of Historic Places as a traditional cultural property and a district. This is really one of the first historic preservation documents that really pulls together Hawaiian traditions and primary and archival resources and really mobilizes them to discuss the cultural significance in a historic preservation framework for Mauna Kea. So to begin, I wanted to very briefly introduce our organization, Huli Alpa'a, and the role that we have in the Mauna Kea TCP nomination. Huli Alpa'a is a nonprofit organization founded in 2012 that includes Hawaiian cultural practitioners and degree professionals. Our main purpose is to educate and empower the people of Hawaii on the stewardship of Hawaii's wahikupuna, or our ancestral places. And like Shelley mentioned, Huli Alpa'a was contracted on behalf of Kaihea and Mauna Kea Nainoho as the official nominators. And we were contracted as a resource and information specialist in wahikupuna stewardship and historic preservation to research and complete the nomination. In addition to our lead drafters and researchers for the nomination, our staff and our board of directors were intimately involved in all stages of the drafting process. We also worked intimately with ethnographers Kepa'a Nonauna Mali, as well as Nonauna McGregor, all whose wealth of ancestral Hawaiian knowledge and resources on historical uses of Mauna Kea were very critical to our research and drafting. So we understand that everyone here just received training on TCPs and how they function in historic preservation. But just as a refresher, the National Park Service does define TCPs as places associated with the cultural practices or beliefs of a living community that are both rooted in a community's history and important in maintaining its continued cultural identity. The pictures you see on this slide are mountains that have been listed on either the Hawaii or National Registers as TCPs. It's also appropriate here to mention that the new NPS TCP guidance slated for release in winter 2024 will not impact this nomination of Mauna Kea to either the Hawaii Register or the National Register. The chief of the National Register and National Historic Landmarks Program, Sherry Freer, confirmed in an email on July 5th, 2023, that, quote, the guidance provided in the current TCP bulletin is and will continue to be valid. The revised TCP bulletin does not include any changes to how a TCP is defined, identified, or evaluated. Rather, it simply includes additional explanations and many, many more examples of listed TCPs to address questions that have been raised or issues that have been misunderstood in the decades since it was last issued. So these are types of historic properties and also types of TCPs that can be entered for inclusion on the Hawaii and or National Register of Historic Places. Districts, sites, buildings, structures, and objects are how historic properties and TCPs can be categorized for listing. This timeline is important because it shows the precedent for listing a selection of sacred mountains as historic properties and TCPs for the National Register. So previous sacred mountains and their associated cultural landscapes that secured NRHP listing as historic properties and TCPs include the Kuchama nomination and the Spirit Mountain Traditional Cultural Property. In Hawaii, Pu'u Kapolei was listed on the Hawaii Register as a TCP in 2021. What's important to note here is that the Kuchama nomination in particular is listed as a TCP and a district, which are the same kinds of designations that this nomination seeks to achieve for Mauna Kea. Also important is nominating a mountain that a community considers sacred to the Hawaii or the National Register as a historic property and a TCP is not a new concept. The nomination of Mauna Kea as a historic property, TCP, and district all aligns with natural precedent for the National Register listing of sacred mountains and their associated cultural landscapes. This timeline here is important because it shows previous official state of Hawaii recognition of Mauna Kea and components of Mauna Kea as a TCP, a historic property, and a district. So the takeaway from this is that nominating Mauna Kea to the Hawaii National Registers is also not a new concept for the state. Official records show Mauna Kea's significance to Native Hawaiian cultural practices and beliefs have been recognized for over 20 years by various state entities, officials, and contractors as a historic property, TCP, and district. And as we've already seen, there's already a precedent set for Sacred Mountains to be included on the National Register. The information here provides a standard guidance for listing historic property on the National Register. So the entity evaluated has to be a tangible property, so a district, site, building, structure, object. And while the intangible resources entwined with the tangible resources can be what makes a property significant, it also must be clear that the tangible property itself is eligible. So also in order for a property to be eligible for inclusion in the register, a property must have integrity. And what's important to note here is that while this is an overview of the standard National Register guidance, TCP guidance does modify the standard guidance a little bit, which we'll discuss shortly. For TCPs to have integrity, the property must have an integral relationship to traditional cultural practices or beliefs, and the condition of the property must be intact in a way that the relevant relationships between the property and the group that considers the property significant survives. So Native Hawaiian perspectives and Mauna Kea really attest to its continuing traditional cultural importance and therefore its historic integrity. Like Waikawakahiko from the ancient times, through the present and for future generations of Native Hawaiians, Mauna Kea is a cultural anchor to place, ancestral knowledge, practice, and identity. Native Hawaiians continue to engage in ancestral practices on Mauna Kea, such as depositing piko or the umbilical cords of our newborn, visiting iwikupuna, our ancestral remains, conducting celestial observations, navigations, participating in the ongoing cultural relationships at wahikupuna, these ancestral places, and their landscape context, and also performing rituals and ceremonies. As such, the tangible and intangible Hawaiian cultural heritage that contributes to the significance and integrity of Mauna Kea and its intertwined cultural and spiritual importance are critical to the history, evolution, and the perpetuation of both the culture and the people. So as Parker and King note in their NPS guidance on TCPs, there is naturally a dynamic relationship between tangible and intangible traditional cultural resources. And the beliefs or practices associated with a traditional cultural property are of central importance in defining its significance. So the tangible and intangible significant cultural resources of Mauna Kea are included but not limited to those provided on this slide. And also previously recognized tangible components of Mauna Kea's TCP contiguous district that are recognized in this nomination also include Kiana Kapo'i Adzpori, Pu'uwayo, Pu'ukukahu'ula, and Pu'ulinunoi. The tangible and intangible resources contributing to the significance and integrity of Mauna Kea as a TCP and its intertwined cultural and spiritual importance are critical to the history and the evolution of Hawaiian culture and people, because the relationship that exists between the mountain and Native Hawaiians is one that cannot be separated. It's first and foremost a genealogical connection, so to deny this is to deny the ancestry of an entire lawfully. And given these realities, the tangible and intangible cultural heritage in the summit region and adjoining boundless cultural landscape that comprise Mauna Kea are non-quantifiable. So as review board members know, these are the criteria for significance that historic properties nominated for either the Hawaii or National Registers must meet or possess. Historic properties only need to possess or fulfill one of these criteria. And at the state level, the highlighted portions are unique to Hawaii, while the other four mirror the federal criteria. This is how the TCP criteria for significance differs from the standard criteria for significance. So for criterion A, not all properties that are culturally significant to community are TCPs. To be significant, the property must be important to the community and play the same role in the community's traditions today as it did in the past. For criterion B, persons can also refer to deities. A TCP can be associated with a person who may or may not have existed in Eurocentric terms, but is still tied by traditions to a physical place. To meet criterion C, masterworks and the craftsmen associated don't have to be educated and trained in the Western sense to produce works evaluated to be of great merit. The masterworks would be considered eligible here if the builder were valued by the living traditional community. For criterion D, a TCP would be considered eligible if it has already yielded or has the potential to yield important information through a variety of studies that include but are not limited to folkloric, archaeological, or ethnographic studies. So really getting into the Mauna Kea nomination. Mauna Kea meets criteria A because the mountain's traditional cultural significance is derived first and foremost from the role that the mountain plays in the cosmology of Hawaiians and the ongoing community's historically rooted beliefs, customs, and practices. Mauna Kea is integral to the cultural identity of Native Hawaiians and is considered one of the oldest ancestors. And as the Kumulipo, our creation chant, and many of our oral traditions inform us, Mauna Kea is the first mountain child of the progenitor gods, Papahanaumoku and Wakea. There's an intergenerational understanding amongst Native Hawaiians of this genealogy, and it was historically recognized by our elite who understood the importance of Mauna Kea's role in our cosmology, as evidenced by Melekaanau of our elite, such as Kaui Keoli or Kamehameha III, which directly links his genealogy to Mauna Kea. To this day, many Native Hawaiians acknowledge Aina as ancestors and present themselves as descendants of Aina, particularly tracing their lineages back to Mauna Kea and the Akua that reside there. Accordingly, Mauna Kea has made and continues to make significant contributions to the broad patterns of our history due to its critical role in Native Hawaiians' historically rooted beliefs that the mountain is a revered ancestor. Mauna Kea is also important not just as an ancestor, but as a significant site for historically rooted customs and practices. Mauna Kea is a living temple, one of the most sacred places in our cosmology, and the site of religious ceremonies and protocols. Native Hawaiians continue to make pilgrimages to Mauna Kea to perform religious ceremonies, protocols, spiritual practices, and to collect important resources for ceremonial use. Again, historically, our ali'i understood the importance of Mauna Kea as a sacred landscape and a seat of power, as evidenced by the various journeys of our ali'i from ancient times throughout the monarchy era. Recorded in genealogical accounts is the history of Umiali Loa, a chief on Hawaii Islands and an ancestor to many Hawaiian families living today. He constructed several places of worship, including Ahu, at various points on Mauna Kea and in the Aina Mauna, the mountain lands, some of which remain to this day. So through this integral relationship with the historically rooted beliefs, customs, and practices of Native Hawaiians, and its critical role in Hawaiian cosmogony, Mauna Kea retains its integrity of relationship. In its current state, Mauna Kea also retains its integrity of condition, despite substantial modifications to the landscape. Mauna Kea is also eligible for listing under criterion B due to its connection with paramount gods who are associated with the creation of the Hawaiian people and future Hawaiian cultural traditions and practices. It's also eligible for its association with ali'i significant in Hawaii's past. So in Hawaiian mythology, Mauna Kea is home to deities that comprise the Vauakua or the godly realm. And these include, but are not limited to, Poliahu, the deity of snow, Lilinoi, deity of mist, and the Mo'oakua, or the reptilian deity, Mo'inanea. So these Akua are associated with the summit of Mauna Kea and are fundamental to our learning and understanding of the biocultural landscape. In the legend of Keaumelemele, Mo'inanea has command over the clouds, and she can move and place them at will, which really reaffirms her divine powers as a high-ranking reptilian water deity. In another genealogy, Poliahu is the daughter of Kane and Hina. In that genealogy, Poliahu represents the relationship of water to both Kane, the sun and the water form, and Hina as the moon. For context, I'll relay one mo'olelo from Hawaiian historian Emma Ahuena Taylor that she published in 1931 because it features a lot of these aforementioned deities. So Poliahu was a beautiful wahine who was placed on Mauna Kea by Kane. He also placed with her attendant, Lilinoi, and Mo'inanea, her guardian. To keep her happy and to really just make sure she enjoyed her seclusion on Mauna Kea, he created a pool called Lake Waiau. One day, Kukaula saw Poliahu and he fell in love with her. So he came to Mauna Kea every day, twice a day, hoping to see her again. But Lilinoi would always shroud her in her mist. Mo'inanea would move clouds to obscure her vision, or sorry, his vision of her. But every day, Kukahu'ula came to the mountain twice a day. So Mo'inanea, seeing how dedicated Kukahu'ula was, finally let him be with Poliahu. So what we learn from this is a lot about the biocultural environment of Mauna Kea. We learn that when Poliahu is present and there's snow on the Mauna, the snow will look red twice a day at sunset and sunrise. And that's when Kukahu'ula, or Ku of the red-tinted snow, is embracing Poliahu. So as you can see, these deities are really important to our understanding of the biocultural landscape and the ecological functions of Mauna Kea. The Kua have a continued significance for Native Hawaiians as part of the storied landscape of the mountain, not only as the elements that they represent, but also as the physical landmarks on the Mauna that bear their names, such as Pu'u Poliahu, Pu'u Lilinoe, and Pu'u Pukahauula. Inoa aina, or land names, memorialize and reinforce Mauna Kea's association with significant Akua and their functions. As for our ali'i, the mountain's sacredness and significance have been historically recognized by prominent ali'i from the ancient times, the monarchs of the kingdom era, and Native Hawaiians today. To mention a few, Umiali Loa, who we previously discussed, is a famous 15th century ali'i known for uniting Hawaii Island under one rule, and he shares a significant association with Mauna Kea. So during his reign, Umi retained a number of advisors who all had specific skill sets. He had Kilo Hoku, astronomers, he had Kui Kui Pu'uone, architects, Kui Oka Oka, meteorologists, and Ko'e Kalai Aina, or land dividers. And he constructed a number of features throughout the Aina Mauna that supported the skills that he learned from his retainers. And Mauna Kea was sacred to Umi, and he considered the mountain an ancestor, which is also why he built Ahu of worship there. And as an ancestor himself to many Native Hawaiians today, he provides the direct link for many Hawaiians who recognize Mauna Kea in their personal genealogies. Lastly, Queen Emma, who was the wife of Kamehameha IV, with whom she ruled Hawaii with from 1856 to 1863, is an important person of Hawaii's history that is associated with Mauna Kea. In 1881, Queen Emma traveled to Mauna Kea specifically to bathe in the sacred waters of Lake Waiau. Accounts of her trip were widely documented at the time, and over 100 years later, they're still commemorated through mele, through mo'olelo of her trip, through the names of the children of the retainers that went with her in 1881. And her journey really demonstrates the continued sacred practice and cultural importance of Mauna Kea for Native Hawaiians from the 19th century through today. Ethnohistorical resources also record that Native Hawaiians engaged in cultural beliefs and practices with the tangible and intangible resources of Mauna Kea during and following Queen Emma's journey. So accordingly, Mauna Kea is significant because of its association with the lives of deities and people significant in our past. Mauna Kea is also eligible under Criterion C through the distinctive ways that Native Hawaiians resource and manufacture stone tools, installed ahu and trails, and established temples that all uniquely exemplify master craftsmanships in their type, period, and method of construction. Equally important are the open spaces that Native Hawaiians elected not to modify, and the viewplanes and observational practices and other traditional practices and beliefs they facilitate and embody, which are inextricably linked to the significance and integrity of Mauna Kea. Some of the types of construction include Pahu Mana Mana, which consists of stone uprights that align with volcanoes and other significant natural landscape features. The platforms that the Pahu Mana Mana stand on are made of dry stacked pohaku, and they anchor the lateral lines of the uprights with certain stars and planets. So most notably, Pahu Mana Mana were used for astronomy to record the rising and setting of stars, the planetary movements, the eventual movement of magma volcanically, and also with seasonal changes. The Pahu Mana Mana and their foundations are the distinctive method of construction and demonstrative of a highly skilled tradition. Keanukapo'i Ads Quarry is a 7.5-mile quarry located on Mauna Kea, and it's the largest quarry in the Pacific. Ads were an essential tool for Native Hawaiians and served a variety of purposes. Our oral traditions recorded by 19th century Hawaiian scholars record ads making and use as a heavily ritualized component of Hawaiian cultural beliefs and practices, which really underscores the inclusion of Keanukapo'i in the Tuamua Nation under Criterion C as a significant and contributing component of Mauna Kea as a TCP. So whereas other ads quarries functioned as harvesting sites, Keanukapo'i functioned more like a sourcing and manufacturing zone, with different areas throughout the quarry being used for different aspects of ads making. So the quarry really comprised a series of surface and subsurface quarries, manufacturing sites, shelters, and shrines of both occupational and non-occupational nature. And the construction of the shrines located within the quarry are distinctive and found in a few other places in Hawaii. The sites and tools produced in the quarry also embody distinctive characteristics from traditional Hawaiian stone tool manufacture and master craftsmanship. Lastly, trails existed in 5 of the 6 major districts of Hawaii Island and provided direct access to the Aina Mauna. And although the trails were historically plain in appearance, they were durable in design and constructed to afford smooth passage and frequent use. The trails were used to travel between districts and for practices such as collecting stone for adze making, bird catching, coal wood harvesting, canoe manufacture, and transport. As the ethnographers Kepa and Onana Mali describe in their report, Mauna Kea Kuahibi Kuha'o Kamalie, several ancient trails approached the summit of Mauna Kea and were used by travelers through the 1920s. Most of these trails were accessed via the improved government roads around the mountain. So portions of these sophisticated trail systems were later improved upon and overlaid by modern routes, and Native Hawaiians continued to travel on these routes throughout Mauna Kea to access ceremonial sites, shrines, and important land features. Mauna Kea is also eligible under Criterion D, its association with Hawaiian traditional history and culture, because the Mauna provides critical knowledge of and physical evidence for Hawaiian traditions, culture, and history. The mountain also provides an exceptional opportunity to expand on the knowledge through continued cultural practice and use. So to be considered significant under Criterion D, the property must be associated with human activity and be critical for understanding the site's historic environment. And as previously mentioned in the justifications for why Mauna Kea meets criteria A through C, Mauna Kea historically served as a necessary landscape for several human activities. Additionally, Mauna Kea's association with Hawaiian culture and history critically informs how Hawaiians understand Hawaii's pre and post contact history, and most importantly, how people interact with Mauna Kea as a historical, ancestral, and sacred environment. The preservation of Mauna Kea enhances the environmental quality of Hawaii due to its role as a major watershed, and its role in the hydrology cycle, its unique and distinguished viewscapes, and its biocultural landscape. The preservation of Mauna Kea as a place of continued Hawaiian cultural practice and knowledge generation also contributes significantly to the understanding and enjoyment of the history and culture of Hawaii and the Pacific. Mauna Kea has yielded very critical information about the pre- and post-contact history of Hawaii and is instrumental to the evolution of Hawaiian knowledge cultivation and practices. Lastly, its preservation facilitates the perpetuation of knowledge generation and the recognition of the sacred nature of Mauna Kea to Hawaii's indigenous people. So just to recap, Mauna Kea meets criteria A because the mountain's traditional cultural significance is derived first and foremost from the role that the mountain plays in the cosmology of Hawaiians and the ongoing community's historically rooted beliefs, customs, and practices. Mauna Kea meets criteria B because it is associated with paramount gods that feature Hawaiian cultural traditions and practice, as well as with the Ali'i whose lives were significant in Hawaii's past. Mauna Kea meets criterion C through the distinctive ways Hawaiians source and manufacture stone tools, installed alpine trails, and established temples that all uniquely exemplify master craftsmanship in their type, period, and method of construction. Equally important are the open spaces that Hawaiians elected not to modify. As previously expressed in the justifications for why Mauna Kea meets criteria A through C, Mauna Kea serves as a necessary landscape for a number of human activities. Historically, a portion of the mountain was used as an extensive adze quarry. The Aina Mauna were utilized for resource gathering, food harvesting, travel, and ceremonial use. And the summit was used for important ceremonial practices, iwi and piko depositing, and observation. Lastly, Mauna Kea's association with Hawaiian culture and history critically and fundamentally informs how Hawaiians understand our history and pre-contact history, and most importantly, how we interact with Mauna Kea. The satisfaction of the threshold criteria for HRHP listing, Mauna Kea significantly enhances the environmental quality of Hawaii, and its preservation significantly contributes to the understanding and enjoyment of the history and culture of Hawaii. For all the reasons provided that Mauna Kea meets the requirements and is eligible for listing as a TCP, we all duly qualify Mauna Kea as eligible for listing as a historic property, as a historic district. The concentration of sites, buildings, and structures within Keanapapa'i adze quarry, the concentration of pu'u and other natural features that Native Hawaiians traditionally ascribe cultural value and significance to, and the concentration and continuity of sites such as Ahuheo and Pu'ahu throughout Mauna Kea, at which Native Hawaiians continue to practice traditional and cultural practices, all contribute to the significance of Mauna Kea as a historic district. Underscoring this, the 1999 Shifty recognition of the summit region of Mauna Kea as, quote, eligible for inclusion in the National Register as a historic district because it encompasses a sufficient concentration of historic properties, i.e. shrines, burials, and culturally significant landscape features that are historically, culturally, and visually linked within the context of their setting and environment. So as discussed in this presentation and heavily documented in detail in the nomination, Monica is an ideal candidate for inclusion on the Hawaii Register and the National Register of Historic Places as both a TCP and a historic district. For the purposes of this nomination, the boundary for Mauna Kea's historic property, TCPN district, is state public lands within roughly 6,500 AMSL. As shown in a previous slide, we have over 20 years of precedent set that there is state recognition of state public lands being eligible for inclusion as a TCP. It's important to note here that one of the requirements for boundary justification is that it must make cultural sense. The roughly 6,500 foot boundary makes cultural sense because it encompasses the Mauapua and a large portion of the Aina Mauna, both spaces where traditional cultural practices occur and important cultural resources are found that make Mauna Kea significant to Native Hawaiians. Including the entirety of Mauna Kea's summit and the roughly 6,500 foot boundary is important because this portion of Mauna Kea is a necessary and crucial factor to the continued cultural practices and beliefs of Native Hawaiians. This elevation is also inclusive of many of the summits of the small pu'u that surround the summit itself. It's also important to note that the state public lands within the 6,500 foot boundary is one that the Mauna Kea Working Group also identified in 2021 as an appropriate jurisdiction area boundary in their recommendations to the legislature for a new governance and management structure for Mauna Kea. Although the roughly 6,500 foot boundary does not account for the boundlessness of Mauna Kea, nor the totality of the traditional and continued cultural uses of the mountain, its significance and connection with the contiguous biocultural landscape, it does include the Waiakua and large portions of the Aina Mauna that inherently contribute to Mauna Kea's significance, integrity, and qualifying criteria as a TCP. Lastly, the boundary does not diminish the integrity of relationship between Native Hawaiians and the contiguous landscape of Mauna Kea, nor is the integrity of the condition of Mauna Kea in its entirety diminished. These are a few of our references for direct quotes, but please feel free to contact us for a full list of references. In conclusion, Mauna Kea exceeds all HRHP and NRHP eligibility criteria as a historic property, TCP, and historic district. And it's critically important to historical, living, and future Hawaiian cultural practices and beliefs and the perpetuation of Hawaiian culture that Mauna Kea is listed as an historic property, TCP, and district. Again, this truly aligns with previous testimony issued by Tom King, the co-author of NPS's guidance on TCPs in support of the designation of Mauna Kea as a TCP. Previous efforts by the SHPD to recognize Pu'u, Lilinoi, Lake Waiau, and Kukahaula as TCPs, and the SHPD's 1999 decree that the summit region of Mauna Kea is eligible for inclusion on the National Register. Mahalo so much for your guys' time.
No, an excellent presentation, too. Thank you. Both of you did a good job.
So, is there indication that people would like to provide testimony online? Have some? Okay.
It may be better when you've got people online. It'd be better to ask questions now as each person is testifying.
Okay, sure.
Rather than try to
go back
after everybody.
Okay.
I had a quick comment and a question. First of all, having just edited something, where I had to take the copy editor's italics out of every Hawaiian word, I appreciated that you put English words in italics. I thought that was very interesting. But the other question had to do, and Ralph, you brought it up to me too, is Peter Young's letter to us about boundaries.
Peter Young was concerned that in this designation of your boundaries, that they included some federal land, and I just wanted to get a clarification on that.
Yes, so we did submit an amended figure for that where we took out federal lands. That was an oversight on our part, and we apologize. So we did submit that yesterday with a corrected map, which is the same one that we used here that excludes the federal lands in our boundary.
Okay, there's nothing that would say we couldn't have a federal lands, is there? You did this for a convenience, really,
public
right?
Public lands are public lands.
Right.
There's nothing precluding you from including federal lands.
Yeah, because it's not an ownership issue.
No.
It is a process issue, though, because then they have, I mean.
They would want to comment on it.
Well, they also are the only people who can process a nomination for federal lands. would have to go through the Army's FDO to go to the TV.
Got you.
It doesn't matter since it's not included. So.
Right. So that so probably
makes,
is a...
It makes our life infinitely easier. Thank you.
Tactically important, not necessarily strategically.
Yeah.
I recognize that tactically, you're including state lands. Where would the boundary be if it were not limited to state land? Just philosophically is what I'm trying to get.
Right. For us, it was a little difficult to determine where a boundary would exist on what we understand to be a boundless area. Mm-hmm. So for us, referring back to the NPS guidance that it has to make cultural sense, we believe that there's been enough precedence by both the Mauna Kea Working Group and other folks like scholars and ethnographers alike who let us know that 6,500 feet really helped to encompass large portions of the important areas that contribute to the significance, as well as a lot of the pu'u or the surrounding hills that are also very important for things such as burials and other cultural practices. So for us, it was really a difficult bound to make. I'm not too sure what that boundary would look like if we had had to expand out of that.
For example, it's been made mention that Mauna Kea taken from the sea floor would be the tallest mountain on earth.
Right.
Would that constitute Mauna Kea if it were not being limited to the 6,500?
I think if we were not limited, we would be able to justify the boundlessness of the nomination or the boundlessness of the property.
That would be the boundlessness?
For us, yeah.
That might be Hawaii Island, right?
Right. It would be potentially an island-wide listing.
You know, at the end of the day, any boundary, not just the TCP, is purely an administrative construct. You know, and it meets an administrative purpose. Mm-hmm. It is more obvious that this is, you know, what the problems with that is. We're talking about a TCP, but, you know, doesn't matter. You know, when you talk about a National Register nomination for a house, is it the footprint of the house? Is it the, you know, is it the house and the outbuildings? Is it the TMK? Is it the view shed? I mean, you make a decision that makes sense in terms of, you know, both the property and the administrative considerations.
I had a similar question regarding the dates of significance. I saw one of the items in the TCP manual where the mountain was from creation to present. Are there dates that you have in this?
From creation to present for significance?
Yes.
I do not believe they specifically call out dates in the nominations.
Out of curiosity, is that something that Tom King also had in his guidance? How did he suggest you?
He cited examples that had that.
As soon as the board is finished asking questions, yeah. Further questions?
Just maybe following up a little bit on some of what Oha brought up, and kind of how it's, you know, I did read the nomination, both the first and the second, but you know, how do you see the, you know, the wildlife that's found there fitting into the TCP and potential effects to the wildlife?
I don't see it really affecting much about what's happening right now in terms of like wildlife preservation. But if you wanted to add more, Rachel.
Yes. So is the question whether or not wildlife is included in the TCP designation? Mm-hmm. The answer would be yes.
And all wildlife that's there. I mean,
all native wildlife for sure, because they're included in a lot of the tangible resources and the practices that contribute to the significance of Mauna Kea. They're critical to that. So they would be included in that way. So I believe in our nomination, we did mention mostly on bird catching, because that was mainly the type of wildlife that was present in the mountain area, and again is featured in a lot of our traditions and practices there.
It's important to note too the nature of Hawaiian oral traditions and Hawaiian evidence is that it's incomplete. A lot remains to be translated. So necessarily there has to be space left for new information that comes out. And in the same way, there may be I'm not a biologist, so excuse the example, but a caterpillar that's really important for a bird for some reason or something like that. And that would be included because it's part of this holistic life cycle. And the life cycle of the resource is connected to Hawaiian culture and practices.
Good question, Nick.
Further questions from the board? Okay. Question from the audience? Go ahead.
Yes, excellent presentation. But I have a question as a person who researches out in the Hamaku Coast area. Kaohe is the largest ahupua'a on the island and is the most irregular one. And during the time of the Mahele, I did not see anything that you had written about how it was designated as to who was whose kuleana it was, basically. And because it goes down to the ocean, which is probably Hakalau or Oilo or Aho, or something where it moves to the land, there's also the avalanche drops that are probably at the trail, which was the Alaloa, which is now the government road. And you go upwards, and it includes Mauna Loa also, and the Humapula. Everything. And my guess is the Humapula, you did say in the document, was separated from the Kaohe, and that's probably because of sheep raising and cattle grazing. They wanted a prime space over there. But you didn't include that middle part. You did great, on the pre-contact and all of the quote for today. But I was wondering why you didn't add who that missing person is in the middle.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll take first. The kugu is can definitely modify and supersede anything that's there. There was an incredible amount of resources to go through to formulate the nomination, which can be thought of as a source of argument. And we had such a richness of resources from other spaces that's just not for the argument. Like, even though the Mahele is undoubtedly a very important time period. We felt we were able to build a convincing case for Mauna Kea as a TCP historic property in the district without delving into that space. And we had just kind of the normal time constraints that people have. So, I don't know if there's anything else to say.
Yeah, we didn't explicitly call out the Mahele, even though it is an important part of our history. What we did instead was included a lot, we dove into the Boundary Commission's testimony. And we use that to really flesh out the use of the Aina Mauna without trying to call out the Mahele itself, which in itself is also kind of a contentious topic and one that's highly researched, but also a lot of the history surrounding it. There's a lot of eha there as well. So that was something that we didn't want to detract from the nomination itself. So it was never explicitly called out, but like Rachel said, we had a plethora of resources that really supported the use that continued throughout that time.
Thanks, Laura. Thank you. Okay. Any further questions? Can we move on to the testimony online?
Well, I think we have people who signed up to testify.
Oh, sorry, I didn't do that first. Sure.
We have people in the room first.
Okay. There's just one. That's Simon.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Aloha. All right, well, thank you, board and members, for sitting through a long meeting and for your service on this board. My name is Wanana Thon, and I'm an attorney with Carl Smith Ball. I represent Pierre Mauna Kea, and they are one of the landowners whose property would have been impacted by the original nomination in July. So really brief testimony. I thank the nominators for working actually with my client and with myself to revise the nomination and the boundary. Very appreciative of that.
We just wanted to confirm on the record that, again, it is, you know, just the state lands that are being considered. And one of the reasons I wanted to come up and speak to you folks is because the nomination that's reflected on HICRIS is still the July nomination with the original proposed boundaries. So I'm hoping that you folks are able to, you know, work with SHPTI to get that updated so that all of the private parcels that were originally included, you know, have been removed from that. And that's really all I want to say. So as long as we have, you know, that confirmation again that private parcels are not being included.
Yeah. Let's make sure the staff updates the posting.
We only received the revised nomination last Friday.
Believe it or not,
we have other stuff to do.
Yeah, we've been updating it online with the understanding that the final nomination that's approved is the one that gets finally updated in HICRIS and our records. So the most recent draft, the one that they will be hearing today, is the one that will be finalized with just the state boundaries.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. We can go to online testimony.
First one should be Kepa and Anon Male.
Do you guys want to use this? That can be helpful so that people online can hear them better.
Is it written testimony?
No.
There you go.
Makoko. We ready to go? Hi. Sorry, I can't hear anybody's voice, so.
Hey, Papa, we can hear you.
Okay. Oh, aloha, okay. Maikawa.
Hi.
Hey. Aloha oko mekamaluhia. Praying for peace and aloha in all of this process as we go forward. Onauna and I have conducted a number of ethno-historical studies for Mauna Kea, focusing on those components that relate to the TCP. I wanted to thank you folks so much for allowing us the opportunity to speak in support of the nomination and for the excellent presentations and the questions that were asked following Shelley and Ku'upua, and then by Rachel. If I may, one thing that was asked regarding Ka'ohe and really Humu'ula, just as a small thing, recognizing that there is a great disparity in the Kuleana Mahele Aina process, 1848 to 1855, but Ka'ohe was retained by the king and then given in its entirety, and then given up to the Aina Aupuni to support the government's generation of revenue, not so much in the uplands, but on those lower slopes where there were valued resources and accesses for the then sort of Western-driven economic cattle ranching and various things that were occurring. Humu'ula, of course, was retained as a crown land resource. We submitted something in writing for you, and we just, you know, would like to reinforce the importance of looking at this Aina Mauna, Mauna Wakea, as a wahipana of many contributing features, all of which add to this greater value as a TCP, as a district, as a cultural district. The reason that we personally looked at the idea down to sort of around that 6,500 foot elevation is because in earlier native testimonies, as we've cited in our studies previously, and early surveys back to at least 1868, Humu'ula was described by early witnesses, Native Hawaiian witnesses, some born at the time, old enough to have seen Cook's ships when they came and passed through the Hawaiian waters, that Humu'ula took in half of the summit with Ka'ohe on the other half. It was after a more, I would say, influenced Western approach to lands and divvying up properties that they pushed Humu'ula down to that lower elevation. So this idea of looking at it in its entirety, I think, is really what the spirit and intent of the whole TCP process is, because the example that we've given in our brief testimony was that, you know, you can't say, well, let's cut off the head and just keep that alive up there and get rid of all the lower body. Well, it doesn't work. You cut the okikopo'o, makekikinoa, you cut one part off, the rest going die. So we just wanted to speak. I think our written testimony will give you further. It's just a page, just about two pages. It'll give you a little further background on our support of this nomination, and that we perhaps take off our Western view of, you know, the biggest buildings or oldest buildings or the biggest burial sites, which happen to be, you know, Civil War or Revolutionary War, but looking at the significance of this landscape in Hawaiian, in that Hawaiian worldview, the cultural attachment. And it doesn't just stop, as was mentioned earlier, about it could be the whole island of Hawaii. Well, Mauna Kea, Mauna Wakea is a noted place, not just on Hawaii Island, but in lore across the islands, with Poliahu in another account coming, visiting Kauai in a heiau there named for her, and in the many Kanikau, the Uehelu, the dirges, which, and Queen Emma's own visit in visiting these storied sacred landscapes. So we urge your thinking with a Hawaiian worldview, and maybe not just being wedded to the DCEs. Let's look at this landscape in its entirety and take it down to that 6,500 foot elevation. So we're here if there should be any questions, but we appreciate and thank you for the time. Keola no opoliahu meku kahaula me lili noi ma. You know, and just that story, all of them are alive and a part of our living culture and history. So aloha oko, and please, ke malama no kako I ka pono ka aina. Aloha.
May I start? This is Deborah Ward. Can you hear me?
We can hear you on my side, Deborah.
Thank you. I'm a member
of the DLNR guys can hear you.
Okay. I'm a member of Sierra Club, and the Sierra Club Hawaii Island group is in very strong support of Mauna Kea and Nainoho's nomination of Mauna Kea as a traditional cultural property, as I am. Mauna Kea is a sacred wahipana treasured by Kanaka Maoli cultural practitioners, both today and in all the generations past. And we encourage SHPTI to accept Mauna Kea as a TCP on the state and hopefully the national registers of historic places. This support is consistent with our policy that we're committed to build community alliances to foster the identification, understanding, education, protection, and preservation of our integrated cultural and environmental landscape of Mauna Kea and the Mauna Kea Science Reserve. Our club members have been involved with testimony and consultation to protect the summit region from industrial development since the 1970s, and in litigation to protect the cultural and environmental values associated with the summit region. Our members have provided expert consultation to the Office of Mauna Kea Management on committees, including the Environment Committee on which I sit, and to the Management Board. We regularly take part in huaka'i, in ceremonial practices with ho'okupu, gathering of vai for healing, tree planting, weed control, and many other things on Mauna Kea with Clarence Ku Ching, Baron Ko'ola Ching, Nelson Ho, Kealoha Pishoda, Kumu Paul Nevis, Ikalani Flores, Pualani Case, and many, many, many other people. Members of our club have been involved in the archaeological surveys since the 1980s and participated in the work conducted with Patrick McCoy and Robert Neese, and in the letter that we sent you cite some of the findings of those reports. And so in conclusion, we believe that the placement of Mauna Kea environments on the Register of Historic Places will provide enhanced recognition of the cultural significance of this important site. An entity seeking state or federal permits, funding, or having to conduct Section 106 consultation will need to address the impacts of their proposals, not just on individual shrines and ahu and finds, as they're called, but to the ring of shrines and to the grand and beautiful connection that all of the features of Mauna Kea, including the natural world, the cultural world, and the physical and geological world, all put together, because they are extremely important to our community. Mahalo nui for considering this action. Mahalo.
Can I go now? This is Claire. You can hear me? I don't know if I can just unmute. Yeah?
Hi, on our side.
Okay. Eau Claire Kohanoa, I'm an Indigenous practitioner coming from the Moors and the Seychelles of the Northern Africa, and a protector of Indigenous knowledge systems. I'm honored that I sit on an International Indigenous Knowledge Council, and that
Claire, you're repeating. It's there's a glitch.
Aloha, can you hear me?
Could hear you, Tara.
Okay, aloha, Tara Rojas. And I'm just wanted to say that yes, I am 100% in support of Mauna Kea as a traditional cultural property, you know, at the historic places. And I actually just want to say, it's pretty much, this should be even common sense, you know, that it should be protected and recognized. And I'm sure that the over 500,000 people that signed the petition, when, you know, and the protection of Mauna Kea would agree. So again, just I'm 100% for this to be approved. Mahalo.
They're all green.
And yours are all green.
Now it's all clean.
Okay. Go for it.
Okay. Any questions for Tara? Any questions for Tara?
Hi. Aloha kako. Things and abundance of the makahiki season on you and everyone. And lonoi ka makahiki. Thank you for this opportunity to reinforce and support the nomination of and recognition of our very sacred Mauna Awa Kea as a traditional property and cultural property. And I just wanted to focus your attention again and reinforce the testimony given about the criteria and how each of the criteria are met as outlined in the application, that it is associated with events that have made significant contribution to our history, beginning with the cosmology of the origin of our islands and the relationship in the birth of the mountain to Mauna Awakea, and the Wakea, our most important deity and ancestor, and that the ritualized landscape itself, with many Ahu, the Ads complex, the our Ivi Kupuna, the Heiau, all speak to the historical and ongoing significance and association of Mauna Kea with our history, the history of our cultural and beliefs and sacred practices, and through the journeys of pilgrimage made by many families, but also of our ali'i to the sacred Wau Akua. And that criterion B, again, as we're saying, is associated with the great deities Wakea, but also those deities of the Mauna, Poliahu of the snow, Lilinoi of the mist, Waiau with the lake, and Kalau Kolea with the fog drip, but also our great chief Umi'aliloa and his heiau enshrines, as well as the pilgrimage of Queen Uma to the sacred place. And again, focusing that the criteria C, distinctive characteristics of a type, are especially evident in the extensive Ads quarry, the largest Ads quarry in Hawaii. And criteria D, the history of yielding important information, and of course, understanding the Waokua, understanding the importance of a sacred mountain that holds the space and creates the climate, not only for Hawaii Island, but for all of our islands, and the important role that this plays in understanding our biocultural history as well. I just wanted to also reinforce the importance of the integrity of this landscape, that our ancestors honored this place as a Waokua, so that a place that we would only go in times that we are called to honor ancestors, or to perform ceremonies, but it is, and that has continued to today. And there are many practitioners who have come forward in the last few years, especially as we have witnessed over the years, that speak to their ongoing practice of taking care of their Ivi Kupuna on the mountain, and needing to have access to that area for that. There's the ongoing practice honoring and calling upon the rains and holding the space that the mountain creates for the attraction of the rains to reinforce their aquifer, and the apa'alani ceremonies that continue, especially on the Ahu behind the visitor center there. And just the importance of respecting the sacredness of Mauna Awakea as this Waokua, that we only go when we're called and we have a purpose, but to observe the Ho'ailona and to be able to accompany them. And the designation for Mauna Kea as a traditional and cultural place property will be very important for the reinforcement of these and continuation of our ancestral cultural customs and practices into the future. Many people have reinforced the integrity of this place through their actions by stepping forward to protect this place from desecration. So mahalo nui, and thank you Kahea and Huliapa for the really excellent and detailed class justification of this boundary, and I urge the board to please accept and accept this application. Mahalo nui loa.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions for Daviana?
I said that correctly? Okay. Do we have more?
Yes. We have Cindy.
Aloha, I'm Cindy Fredis. I'm a descendant of the inhabitants prior to 1778. I also am a culture practitioner that was born and raised in Hawaii, and I learned from my grandparents and still continue the practices from Mauka to Makai. Manukia is sacred because it exists in a space above Earth's atmosphere. It is a Halekadaka Ole, a space where no man should dwell. It is an ancestor because we are the descendants of Wakea and Papa. Mauna Kea provides the starry waters and is buffered for hurricanes. Mauna Kea is the backbone for Hawaii. I am in support of nominating Mauna Kea for this TCP. And moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Cindy? Okay. Next person.
It would just be Claire. She's the one that has the audio. So we'll try again and see if that works.
Okay.
All of our mouth.
Chandra, ask her, send her a text and ask her to log off and log back in.
Gotta record that.
You could see her in 3 minutes.
Yeah, it was 3 minutes.
I'm assuming it's an electronic glitch, but it could be a neurological kind of diversity type of thing.
I thought she was trying to make a point at first, but then after a while.
Repetition is supposed to help.
Yeah, certainly. Was she the last one?
Someone else just raised their hand. Rogue.
I'm not sure how to add my name to the list. I tried sending a direct message, but I didn't know how to.
You could just put it in the other chat too. It would be fine. But you can go ahead and testify now if you'd like.
Okay.
Okay.
Hi. Thank you. Yeah, thank you for hearing me. My name is Caitlin Blanchfield. I'm an architectural historian. And my work includes Mauna Kea and the impacts of astronomical development on the Mauna. But through that work, I've been able to speak with cultural practitioners and environmental activists, as well as read oral histories and testimonies about the significance of Mauna Kea as a sacred cultural landscape and built environment of both present day and historical reverence and use through the Vauakua, the burials, the ahus, Lake Waiau, and many more, all of which you have heard in the testimonies and in the nomination presentation itself. I want to just to testify in support of the nomination of Mauna Kea as a traditional cultural property. From my perspective as a historian of architecture, I think that this would be, a really tremendous way to recognize the unique nature of this cultural landscape, and to really, to value an entire cultural landscape and interconnectivity between sites that make a place both storied and sacred. Given the contested development of the Mauna, it seems extra important to have this designation that will require, more thorough review and to really celebrate the Mauna as a unique environment, sacred space, and a really history and significant built environment. And I think that this this recognition would be impactful for Indigenous cultural sites more broadly as a way to also include the perspective of cultural landscapes and interconnected cultural sites within the register. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Caitlin?
Thank you.
Thank you.
And then we have Kiara.
Veina Maikako, can you folks hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Aloha no, I just like to set the intention in that for me is being a Mo'opuna raised in the Avava of Waipio in the lower lands of Mauna Awakea, who has been blessed enough to been raised in the Vai'akane that has been so preciously brought forth on our lands in our Punavai. I have kupuna that come from Waipio from ancient times, and we're also documented in oral histories to be the last of the keepers of the old chants. And in our ways of teaching, we have been known to thank the great daughters of Kane, Kohopo Akane, Lilinoe, Waiau, Poliahu, to feed our great, our five streams. The five streams of Waipio are known as Hi'ilawe, Waima, Koi'awe, Alakahi, and Kawai Nui. All of these things we get from the great Mauna. And this is why it is so precious. It doesn't just end in this top realm, in this Vau'akua. It feeds down and it feeds all of our people. We know the land below it, Pohaku Loa, is actually called Ka'ohe, which to our kupuna were the bamboos, or which they would use to hold their water throughout their travels. And for me, I just thank you folks to protect this traditional cultural properties and all the great ike that is bestowed upon us. We know that our kupuna have pohaku there that are used for waihaka ceremonies. And for those who don't know, this is when they would commute with the stars, where we believe all of our kupuna are originally from. So with all these things, I just want to continue to say that the great Iwi Kupuna, my kupuna, Lonoa Pi'ilani, from the great clans of Maui, this is Mauna Awakea's connection to Haleakala, and so on and so forth, even past Kauai. So I just want to say thank you all, and I want to especially give my thanks to the great Mauna Awakea that keeps us safe and kept us fed, and fed all my kupuna so that I could be here today to continue their blessings and their lessons. Mahalo piha. Awiho malama pono.
Claire, do you want to try again? Unmute and see if it's fixed now.
All of our mouth.
Did she leave and then came back in?
Yeah, she left and came back as well. Wow. Your audio is still bugged.
Submit written testimony? Ask her.
Did you type in chat did you submit a written testimony, Claire?
All of our mouth.
It's a new kind of Zoom bomb.
It's my fault. I know. It's your fault.
Might as well take it. The bank are going to circle around you anyway.
Okay, so does that conclude all the online testimony?
So far, except for Claire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, Claire.
Before you wrap it up, you should ask if there's anybody else who wishes to testify.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Is there anybody else who would wish to testify? Please.
Aloha mai kakou. My name is Ikini Lindsay, and I hail from Waimea, Moku Okeahe. And I just wanted to iterate that as a child, my grandmother, being born and raised in Waimea, she would have these little mayonnaise bottles, and it would be in our kitchen. And when I was little, she would say, please, you know, don't go climbing on the kitchen sink. Don't touch those little mayonnaise bottles. And she didn't explain at that time. I was like 3 or 4 years old. But in those little bottles were, in biblical courts, of our family. And we come from Great Parker Ranch. My forefathers were great ranchers. And so they would ride their horses up to Hu'u'ula. And then from Hu'u'ula would take the jeep up to sacred Kupuna Mikoyao. And this is where they would go ahead and disperse the umbilical cords. So all of my family history come from Mikoyao, and all of our umbilical cords are there, are Piko. And so I wanted to share that story before I leave today with all of you. So mahalo for having me here and allowing all of my comrades like you. Mm-hmm. So mahalo once again. I just wanted to share that little story with you. The Mimi's bottle.
Thank you very much.
Mahalo again.
Can you sign?
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, this is my name is Bimo, and I'm in Kona. And what I wanted to point out from what I'm viewing is that I haven't heard anyone in opposition against this. And I would ask the board to take that into consideration. I am Hawaiian, but I'm also Portuguese, English, French, and Chinese. So I reflect basically all the people in Hawaii. And as an American, I want to ask this board to take a step toward making us better Americans. We have, throughout the history of our country, basically suppressed the cultural natives of the lands that we became a part of. Throughout the continental United States, throughout Hawaii, and throughout the islands of the South Pacific, we really have not been the Americans that I was taught to be and told I am throughout my education through schools. And so I ask this board, as an American, make us better Americans. Let's stop suppressing the culture and the people and we are so fortunate to be a part of. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I don't dare walk to that end of the table.
Are we doing this? That's
the time.
Okay.
Is there anybody else online?
Before that one.
No, one last time for Claire.
Claire left, but I don't know. I guess she'll email it in.
Okay.
We did receive just this morning, last I checked, another 50 letters of support, none of opposition, I can speak, that we will add to the file for you all.
Great.
Okay. Any questions?
Okay. I would add just one comment that, you know, just for your reference. The Ads Corps is actually a National Historic Landmark. So, I mean, this is whatever decision you make with regard to the TCP, it is encompassing an existing NHL. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Somebody like to make a motion?
I guess you guys. What's the import of that?
Well, I mean, I looked at. I think the most important part of that is in terms of what level this is designated at, state, national, state, local, national, is, it seems to me, you know, I know I'm not supposed to do this, beg your pardon, Chair. It seems to me that this is a nationally significant place, but in any case, that aside, you know, this is going to incorporate a contributing property. Contributing element that is amongst the most important historic properties in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, listing it at less than the national level seems to be a real, you know, a disconnect.
The suggestion was a local level of significance, isn't it?
You're like nominating it to the Hawaii Register and asking us to
recommend
it to be sent to the National Register.
Yeah, but at what level of significance? Remember, there are three levels of significance: state, local, and national. Within that,
now, could they amend the boundary to exclude the landmark portion?
No, there wouldn't be any reason to.
Don't need to do
that.
There'd be no reason to.
I mean, you know, look, I've been through this in my career where the Park Service has looked at National Register nominations and completely rewritten the boundaries because for their administrative perspective, you know, and when I worked in Illinois, the Park Service created the idea of a discontinuous district to deal with an archaeological complex that we thought made up an entire, you know, it's an entire island. And the Park Service said, no, it's all of these archaeological sites individually, not the entire island. So, you know, I'm just saying, from my perspective, it has to be national. And I think the fact that it incorporates, you know, and the Antiquary, which is a national historic landmark, that, you know, that's sort of the minimum, is the national level. I mean, wouldn't want to suggest to anybody to go through the NHL process for this. My boss would kill me. It would take us, I will be long retired before that process was ever completed. But I do think that at least this is at least a national historic.
Which box did you tick? I forget.
I think the revised nomination didn't include that.
I think that's a box that we can fundamentally.
Yeah, we can do that.
It's on our certification to the Park Service.
Okay.
We can do that, but that is something the board needs to add on, make a recommendation.
Okay. I'll just check.
Did you want to make your motion?
Well, I'd like to make a motion, but is national significance okay?
Yeah, my understanding is that we put it forth to both, but the procedure that you folks need to review is correct, and that it was your decision whether or not it moves forward to the national.
No, that's right. A different issue. The nomination itself has three levels of significance. It can be either nationally, statewide, or locally significant. That's different from whether it gets listed on the register. It can be on the register at local significance.
So your question is, at what level would you like it recognized? At the state and national level.
Okay. Does that need to be amended?
I think that
no.
Checks
like
the box.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
A box we can check.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the copy.
In fact, if the board decides it doesn't want to say anything at all, I will check it. Assuming you recommend nominating.
Yes. Okay. Well, if it's not too impertinent, I'd like to take the honors.
Please.
I'd like to make a motion to list the Mauna Kea traditional cultural property and district on the Hawaii Register of Historic Places under criteria A, B, C, and D, and at a national significance level. And I'd also like to recommend forwarding it to the National Register of Historic Places.
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Well, thank all of you for coming. Thank you.
Wait, we're not done yet.
We haven't voted, but
no, you're
that
right.
Was my comment. Was that.
They can leave. It's still going to be on the record.
Right. Yeah, yeah, but I just want to thank everybody for being. We usually don't get such a good audience.
Yeah.
The only point of discussion I had, I just wanted to thank you. There's clearly a lot of thought put into this. It's, you know, it's a great nomination. I think it's important for Mauna Kea, but I also hope it serves as an inspiration for other TCPs, for people that read this, people that are watching. So thank you for starting what I hope is kind of a trend.
Any further discussion? Okay. I'd like to take a vote, please. All in favor?
Yeah. Well done.
The easiest one.
I
earned it.
What great leadership we have.
So we have the meeting
yes.
And also
the meeting dates. Yes. Welcome to stay. But next on the agenda is the meeting dates. So of course, I guess we need to choose the dates, and then we talk about the limited meeting.
I want them back on Saturdays.
So no. Oh, you're welcome to come here on Saturday and swelter. Yeah, the AC goes off at 4:30.
Oh, look at that. It can even limit our meetings to a certain time.
We used to have our meeting here.
No windows or anything.
Turn the lights off while we're still here.
It's not even possible to get into the center section.
So we had to do male and female taking turns.
I just wanted to hear the discussion. Those dates are fine.
I thought this would be more controversial than why these TV cameras here or something.
I don't think it'd be controversial, but I thought there would be more.
Did you want Saturday?
We're talking about the meeting date stuff.
Well, they were very polite and nice about it.
Yeah. Can you decide where we can hear
you? No, I'm teasing. Oh, do we have to make the resolution?
I thought there might be some opposition by the
Do we have to make the resolution for there to be a limited meeting next time?
Testify against us.
Okay, so first, you guys, we're talking about the meeting dates for next year. Thank you very
much. Thank you. Good job.
Good job. Good work.
Okay. You guys deserve a good week.
Ralph. We're going to talk about the meeting dates for next year now. Chandra's going to lay it on us.
Okay.
Well, not these.
No. So what I wanted to do was move it about a week later so that we could have the boardroom. So on February 9th, I wanted to move to the 16th.
That's okay.
Yeah, and then for the August 23rd meeting, move it to August 30th.
Okay.
And we can be in the boardroom the whole year next year.
That'd be good.
Okay. That's all.
17th is still good?
May 17th.
May 17th.
Yeah.
And November 15th.
Yes, those dates are split. Yeah.
Okay. Is everybody okay with November 15th? I know it's like the week right before Thanksgiving, so just kind of like it is right now.
Same right now, yeah.
Yeah.
We can talk about
those
dates too, so that way
people
are
ready for
the 30th and the 16th, I think.
16th.
Okay, it's February
16th
and August 30th.
And May 17th and November 15th.
I already put them in my calendar. I haven't changed it.
Sounds good.
Okay.
So we need to make a motion for a limited meeting for each one of these for our next meeting for the February. So it would be February 15th. Oh, and then hold on, I have.
Yeah, 15th.
16th.
Anybody would like to use the suggested
1-6.
Language?
Oh, 1-5 for the limited.
Okay.
You've got the words.
No, that's something else. I brought this with me.
Thank you.
I found this in my
book. Oh, yeah.
So if somebody would like to make a motion for the limited meeting for the first property.
I'd like to make a motion to hold a limited meeting of the following Oahu nominated residents on February 15th, the Bowers House.
Yep. You have to do it one at a time.
Yeah, just the Bowers House for now. Public attendance at these private residences is impractical due to liability, privacy, and safety concerns. And then I would also like to make a motion to waiver videotape requirement for the Bowers House. You got to say all this? Yeah. The waiver of this requirement is for the privacy and safety of the homeowners. Photographs of the character defining features of the property, which make it eligible for the register, are available to public on SHPD website 30 days prior to the public meeting. An audio recording of the site visit, including any discussion with the homeowner, will be made available on the SHPD website as well.
Okay.
Second.
Any questions? Second.
I'll second that.
Okay. Any discussion? Vote in favor, limited meeting February 15th for the Bowers House?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll discuss.
No. Sorry. Would you like to discuss?
We're supposed to discuss, right?
We're supposed to discuss it. But
yeah. If you want.
I think I agree. Okay. Because private residence.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
Okay, great. Any other discussion?
Well, for the discussion
from
this
part. Okay. And
we're all
yes. Okay.
Did you actually vote?
Yeah, we did.
Okay. So it was unanimous, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
Can we see a raise of the
answer,
please? Okay, just to make
it on there. To say which of the unanimous voters
there
were.
Okay, somebody like make a motion for.
I'd like to make a motion for a waiver of the video requirement for let me start at the beginning. I'd like to make a motion to hold a limited meeting of the following Oahu nominated residents on February 15th, 2023, the Dilks property. I think public attendance at these private residences is impractical due to liability, privacy, and safety concerns. I'd also like to make a motion for a waiver of the videotape requirement for the Dilks property. And again, just for privacy and safety of the homeowners, we'll photographs of the character finding feature of the property, which make it eligible for the register, will be available on the SHPD website, and also an audio recording of the site visit, including a discussion with the homeowner, which will be made available on the SHPD website.
Okay. Any questions for Nick?
Okay. I move that we.
Are you seconding?
Wait,
I thought you said any questions. I'm sorry, but would you like a second?
He moved. I'll second.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right.
Okay. Now, any discussion?
I'm looking forward to seeing the Dilks property. I remember that.
Yeah.
They couldn't get listed on the state register because they weren't 50 years old or not.
Really?
It's an ossipop.
Property. Yeah, yeah. I'm familiar with it.
Supposedly the last ossipop.
It was funny. You guys outvoted
me. And it's very.
But why is it very regional?
Because before it only went to the National Register because it wasn't eligible.
So it's nationally listed.
Nationally listed. Could not be listed on the Hawaii Register.
Protection to stay in solidarity.
Right.
Okay. So we can just amend it to also be on the state register. Okay. Interesting.
And it's a very good example.
Okay. All in.
House of Puffs retreat and regional postmodernism.
Yeah.
All in favor of a limited meeting to the Dilks residents on February 15th?
I'm looking forward to seeing it, actually.
Somebody like to make a motion for a limited meeting to the Domlau?
I guess we
Domlau residents? I think I skipped the second one.
So. Which one?
Domlau. Can you say that?
Huh? Oh, it's not on this.
Make your say it again.
It's on the agenda.
Oh, and then. There's five of us. There are five properties, right?
Well, we were not going to the 16th Avenue one. That's been removed. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, I would like to make a motion to hold a limited meeting of the following nominated residents on February 15th, and that residence would be the Felicissimo Domlau and Julia Domlau property. Public attendance at these residences is impracticable due to liability, privacy, and safety concerns. So I'd like to make a motion further for a waiver of the videotape requirement for the Domlau residents. The waiver of this requirement is for privacy and safety of the homeowners. Photographs of the character-defining features of the property, which will make it eligible for the register, are available to the public on the SHPD website 30 days prior to the public meeting. An audio recording of the site visit, including any discussion with the homeowner, will be made available on the SHPD's website.
Okay.
Second.
All right.
Hold on. Can I just bring one thing about the date? So it's going to be February 15th now. So
yes.
That's what I said. I said February 15th.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Just want to make sure.
Yeah, we got that. Okay. We have a second. Any discussion? All in favor of a limited meeting February 15th at the Domlau property?
Aye.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, and then one more is the McKay Building.
Each of us gets a chance, Rob.
Oh, okay. Which building?
McKay.
I'd like to make a motion to hold a limited meeting of the following Oahu nominated residents on February 15th, 2023, the David O. McKay Building, BYUH Hawaii.
Keep going.
Let's see, public attendance at these private residences is impractical.
Down's going to be it's a public space, so you don't have to do the private part of it.
Due to liability.
It's a public place for everybody to go to, so.
No problem with
it. It's not a residence.
We can invite everyone.
So we don't need to do a limited meeting for that building?
Well, it's private property.
Yeah, private property, but not like how we usually say it's a private residence, or we could say it's a public accessible building, university.
Privately owned.
Maybe, yeah.
I don't think you can use a public building as a basis for a waiver.
Well, I think
you're going to have to say it's a private building.
Yep. Due to liability, privacy, and safety concerns.
Okay.
And then there's the waiver.
I would like to make a motion for the waiver of videotape requirement for the following nominated building, David O. McKay Building, BYUH. This waiver is required. Of this requirement is for the privacy and safety of the
property owners.
Photographs of the character defining features of the property which make it eligible for the register are available to the public on the SHPD website 30 days prior to the public meeting. Audio recording of the site visit, including any discussion with the building owner, will be made available on the SHPD website.
Thank you.
Give me the top one.
Second that.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor of the limited meeting to the McKay Building, February 15th?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, anything else?
I have a question.
Sure.
Why do you always raise your hand?
Because my pen's in the right
hand. Yes, that's what I thought it was.
This is my stabbing arm.
Folks, before you wrap up, would you remind us who seconded Bill's motion on the Denwell property?
Was that me?
Site visit?
I think that was.
I think that was Nick.
Okay, thank you. That was Nick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When is the meeting then?
The 16th. Yeah. Whatever that Friday is. Okay. Anything further?
Do you see my Saturday motion didn't work?
Nobody seconded it.
Politics, okay. So. All right. Thank you, everybody. Meeting adjourned.
It was so nice.
Well done, Katie.
Well, that was fun.
Okay. I got some questions.
Graham had never been here when we had the photo bomb. Remember that time?
No, this is now a discussion.
Thank you. Thank you.
I know, it only happened once. Thank you, Laura.
It's the Gilks property. We might have to go for another meeting. We have half a week. We can probably still do the site visit for the limited, but the building may not have been.